Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever met someone who has had amnesia? Or have you ever had it happen to you? You know, I had it happen to me this year for the first time, and I'll tell you, it was a very, very scary experience for me and my family. Would you like to learn more about total amnesia versus visual amnesia? Have you ever wanted to know about the white light? You know, you hear about people who have died and they see the white light and they return to tell us about it. Can you imagine experience an NDE, that's a near-death experience? Tell me, do you know how to manage your medicals? Medicals, isn't that a great term? Have you ever heard about a book called Unlikely Memories and Two Amnesias? Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful, how to deal with amnesia, and more about the white light? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest. She is a success coach extraordinaire, and she will provide us with wonderful information and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk for Media and syndicated on iHeart Radio Talk and Blog Talk Radio. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure. Also, LinkedIn announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed last year. Now, let me tell you about my guest today. My guest is a camera without film. She is a woman without a history. In her memoir, Unlikely Memories and Two Amnesias, she shares her continuing struggles and triumphs with two unrelated forms of amnesia, complete and total amnesia, and then visual amnesia. These short stories are set against an inspirational background of travel, dating, cooking, teaching, and remembering who she is. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show today, Holly Winter. Hi, Holly. How are you?
Hello. I'm good, thank you.
I'm so happy to have you on the show. And tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your early success stories and who your first mentors were.
I would have to say that my first mentors were my family. My family has been very important, as you can imagine, when you've had a number of medical problems in your life that your family really steps in to help. So my family has really been there for me. I have an uncle who's really worked hard to understand, and everyone just always trying to boost me up.
Oh, that's terrific. That's terrific.
Yeah.
Now, you have renamed your medical issues or medical problems. You call them medicals, and I love that term. Quite frankly, I've never heard it before, and it refers to not issues but problems. How many medicals do you yourself have right now?
You know, I have probably top four. I have five, but I have top four that I would talk about today. I don't look at medical problems anymore as problems or as issues. They're who I am, they're the way I live, and they're what I've been given.
Uh-huh.
So it's really important. I work with children who are chronically ill also. I'm a teacher. And I really stress to the kids, this is who you are. This is your life. It's your medical. Other people might see it as a problem, but we don't have to.
Yeah.
And I have complete and total amnesia. That happened when I was 18 years old. I got an early dose of a date rape drug that took more than one night away. It took my first 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And then a couple years later, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And this total amnesia was drug-related?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a psychotropic drug when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like 1980s, and it was not indigenous to the United States. And all they know is that this drug erased everything. I started over. I had to learn language.
Oh,
I had to learn how to walk and talk and use the bathroom. I lost absolutely everything.
Wow. And how long did it take you to get your life back again?
I'd say a couple of years. Again, I just have such a smart mom and a smart family that they decided to get me right back to college. I couldn't read yet. I couldn't write yet, but they put me in a photography class. And so they really worked to try to keep me in the mainstream. Like, I had never seen a dog before. I had never seen an insect before. The world was completely brand new. So it took a long time.
I've never heard of anything like that. Now, you called that total amnesia. And then what's the difference between total amnesia and visual amnesia?
So some years later, when I was 24, I was in a car accident, and my heart stopped. And there was some damage done to a part of my brain that has to do with vision and memory. So I have visual amnesia, which means I cannot remember what anything looks like. I can see it,
uh-huh.
but the moment I look away, I cannot recall what it looks like.
And this continues to this day?
Absolutely. To
wow.
this day, to get home, I use my GPS, or I have to pay very close attention to the names of streets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know when I'm at my house, I haven't memorized what it looks like, but I drive by it often.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what my mom looks like. I don't know what my friends look like. I don't know what my car looks like. I'm right now talking to you from my dining room. I don't know what my office upstairs looks like if I'm not standing in it looking directly at it.
Okay, now if your mom would walk in the room and you would see her, would you know who she is?
If I was at my mom's house and she walked in from another room, I know I'm at her house, so I would know that was her. If I were in the grocery store and my mom walked by, I would not know that's her at all.
Wow. So you have to be in certain...
And she knows that.
You have to be in certain surroundings. This must be very difficult to have personal relationships with these issues, dealing with these issues all the time. How does that work out for you?
You know, it can be difficult, but it's one of those good reminders that I need to have very good, kind people surrounding me at all times.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to go do something at night, friends will say, do you want us to pick you up? Or we'll meet outside, or we'll talk first to coordinate. So, yeah, I have really good people around me.
Yeah. Now, do you have a support group, people that you can work with who have had this same experience?
You know, that's actually a really good question. The doctors say that I am the only known case of visual amnesia. They don't know of any other cases. There is some on the books that came about from people with extensive brain damage, from other things, but they've just never heard of it. So, no, I am a support group of one.
Wow.
I have something that I call my medical cousins, and my medical cousins would be people who have something called face blindness or protopagnosia. People with protopagnosia, they have trouble recognizing faces and people. They'll see a blur where there's a person. I can see faces, I just can't remember what they look like.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, when I saw your profile, I was very anxious to have you on the show because I myself, this year, I'm in my 70s now, and I experienced a thing called transglobal amnesia. I woke up one day and couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember
wow.
my children, my husband. I couldn't even remember my dog's name. And I was helicoptered to Mayo Clinic, and they did a brain scan. Fortunately, after about 6 to 8 hours, my memory came back completely. They had said they had never seen this. So ever since I had this episode of TGA, transglobal amnesia, I've been very, very interested in this topic and interested in how people who have it ongoing, how it affects your life. And I think you're sharing with us this experience, and that you're a support group of one. That must get very lonely.
No. You know, I am a special education teacher mm-hmm. as well as a writer. And as a special education teacher, one of the things I teach students, and I remind myself constantly, that we need to lean on our strengths.
Uh-huh.
So my job is to go, you know what? I'm really good at making cookies. I'm really good at listening. I'm a good friend. I love to travel. Like, I have to remember the things that I'm good at.
Uh-huh.
Because if you wanted me, you know, challenge me to an arm wrestle of remembering what things look like, I would lose. Or if
okay.
you wanted to talk about my childhood, I can't.
Right.
So yeah,
okay.
sometimes I can spiral down, I can. But I just stop and I go, wait, let's look at what I can do.
Mm-hmm. And you were now in a car accident, and that's what created the visual amnesia. What kind of an accident were you in, and how long ago was that?
So that accident happened about 24 years ago.
Okay.
So I've had a long time to get used to the visual amnesia.
Uh-huh.
It happened about 24 years ago, and it was a car was turning, another car hit that car from behind, and so it was a three-car crash. I was going
uh-huh.
55 miles an hour, the speed limit.
Yeah.
All of us lived. I had the most damage. I had a broken sternum, and it took a long time to figure out what else was going on. Because I had chronic pain, and I had, it ends up I also got epilepsy from that car accident.
Okay.
I have an unusual kind of seizures. I have visual seizures,
uh-huh.
or visual hallucinations are called. So it took a that was masking the visual amnesia. So it took a while to kind of figure everything out. It took them 5 years to be able to diagnose me with a visual amnesia.
My gosh, I can't believe, oh, that's amazing. Now, your heart stopped after the accident, and so technically you died, and you talk about experiencing the white light, and tell us about what that was like.
So imagine the car accident, the pain, like I had that moment of pain, of horror, of terror. When you're in an accident, your eyes are open. My eyes are open. I didn't think I'd hit the car, because honestly, I'd never hit a car before.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
to go from total peace to total chaos and pain, and then it all went away. It was just gone. It
oh, my gosh.
An amazing gift. So I went from chaos and fear and my mind just imploding
uh-huh.
to relaxing, happy. I felt like I was part of everything. There was that white light. I didn't hear voices. I know sometimes people do. I didn't see any people.
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
a very amazing experience, something very positive, and I felt so lucky to have had it and to have felt it.
Well, I want to talk more about it after we take a break and hear from our sponsors. You know, this near-death experience in white life is becoming a very interesting topic. For the first time, people are now being open about it and talking about it and sharing it with us. And we'll be right back with Holly Winter, who is going to share more about her white light experience.
Pam Evans has been married and divorced 4 times and lived to tell the tale with honesty, humor, and a heartfelt message. Check out Pam's first book, Ring Exchange, Adventures of a Multiple Marrier, where she shares her hard-won lessons about behavior, emotions, relationships, and her marriage partner choices. Learn more about Pam's road less traveled and how she anticipates every day with joy and a sense of gratitude. Visit Pam's website at www.ring-exchange.com. Her book is available on Amazon.com, too. Everyone deserves a happy life. Life is supposed to be fun. Your life is supposed to feel good, and you're meant to feel happiness in your life and to satisfy your dreams. And you can. Because the only reason anyone wants anything or does anything is that they think they will feel better in the having of it or the doing of it. They think they will feel better in the experiencing of it. Coming soon, a website where you can learn more on how you can have the life you deserve at afeelgoodworld.com.
Welcome back with my amazing guest, Holly Winter, and she's the author of a remarkable book called Unlikely Memories and Two Amnesias. Holly, before we took the break, we were talking about that you had a horrific car accident, your heart stopped, and you were clinically dead, and then you experienced the white light where you went from chaos and fear to a pain-free, zero fear of death. Does that experience stay with you to this day?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, for years after that experience, I just wanted to die. And it's hard to even admit that because I love my life, but it was such a good feeling. I wanted to get back there. Mm-hmm. And I finally sat down with a therapist, and he's like, maybe you're supposed to be alive. I was like, okay. Maybe you're right. But I can tell you, I have zero fear of death. There is no fear. I am not in the least bit concerned. It is an amazing feeling of connection and belonging and in the right place. And it's a flow that it's an amazing feeling.
What an amazing gift that you've been given. And it's wonderful that you've been able to share that through your writing and meditation. And you have this connection to the other side, but yet you're back here and sharing this story. How do most people react when they hear your story?
You know, it's funny. When I wrote the first draft of my book, I had the white light experience in it, and I could not get an editor to edit the book. So I actually took it out. Yeah. I actually did not write it in my book. They wouldn't take it. It was too upsetting to them. They didn't know how to handle it. And I was like, okay, maybe the world isn't ready. So I'm so excited to know that you are willing to talk about it. Not all of my friends, it's not something I tell everybody. You know, I don't, it's sort of one of the, I'm happy to talk about it. And like you say, the world is opening up. But it's one of those things, it's such a private, amazing memory. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to talk to anyone who understands. I know I dated a cardiologist some years ago, and I asked him what he thought about the near-death experience. And he said, oh, it's just chemicals. And I went, you haven't been there. I have been there, and it is wonderful. And he went, yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know.
Well, you know, it is something that people have to experience. And once they experience it, it changes their life and their outlook. As a matter of fact, we're putting together another book this year. My first book was Priceless Personalities, Success Stories, shared by January Jones. And this next book is going to be Priceless Personalities, White Light, Near-Death Shared Stories. So we will hope to be able to include your story in the book. And I agree with you. It's amazing that now that people feel they can talk about it, more and more people are bringing this topic to the forefront every day. Don't you agree?
I do agree. I agree. And I'm so glad you're doing that book. I think that's a great, great book to put out there. You have very good ideas for books, my dear.
Oh, thank you. We will keep you posted.
I hope so. You know, when it's something that if one person goes through it, yeah, maybe. But so many people, as you say, have gone through it, just like amnesia. Like you've just told your amnesia story. I cannot tell you how many people walk up to me and say, I actually had amnesia, but I've never told anyone.
Right, And, you know, you after you go public with it, you're right. It's more and more people share their stories because it's kind of a strange story to share. A lot of people can hardly believe it. Also, it kind of leaves you frightened. After my experience, you know, you worry about it happening again when you don't expect it. So far, I've been lucky on that one. You know, let's talk a little bit how you manage your medicals, because now you have four issues that you deal with. And I know some days are tough, but some must be even tougher. And you have to have a plan here. What do you do?
So for each of my medicals, you're absolutely right. I do have a plan. For celiac, you know, I cannot eat any gluten, and I'm not one of those people who said, oh, I'll just take a little gluten out. I cannot. I have an autoimmune reaction to celiac. That changes an adult. I carry protein bars with me all the time. Mm-hmm. Before I go to a restaurant, I call to see if they can accommodate me. If not, I see if I can go to a different restaurant. There's a lot of choices.
Going back to the celiac, did you always have that? Did you have this as a child, and how did you discover that you had it?
My mom remembers as a child I got stomach aches a lot and that I didn't like pizza or sandwiches, which other people tend to like.
Yeah.
It was adult onset that didn't follow the course that they expected it to follow. You know, I just had symptoms that made no sense to the doctors. So it took them a while. But boy, it changed my life, and I figured it out. It really did.
Yeah, and I know this is very hard to diagnose. I have a friend who went through many years dealing with this before they finally realized that she had to go on a special diet. Like most things, this is also becoming more public, and people are talking about it. I think this is a good thing to share with families who have children who are dealing with this problem, and people don't realize what's at hand. Don't you agree?
I agree. And I actually mentor quite a few people who become celiac, and I point them toward brands that I think they'll like and stores that are more helpful. I think it's not a cure-all for everything,
mm-hmm.
but, man, if that's your issue and you can just change your diet and feel healthy, I consider that pretty lucky for myself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a simple solution, but it's difficult to discover. Now, let's talk about your heart. And you have a heart monitor in you?
So, no, I have something called superventricular tachycardia, which is where my heart will beat off rhythm, and it'll beat really fast. So I could be sitting in a chair, and it could go up to 180 beats just sitting in a chair.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of like jogging. I'm like, hey, do I get the benefits of jogging while I'm sitting still? That would be awesome. I had surgery, and they fixed it. So I just have to be careful. If I get too tired or too run down, if I get dehydrated, the heart mm-hmm. can start its business. So, mm-hmm. again, that's part of my plan to make sure that I am just staying healthy.
Now, did you have this condition before the car accident, or was this something car related to the accident?
That was also related to the car accident.
Okay. And the other thing that you're dealing with, of course, is the amnesia. Talk about what it's like living with that a little more, please.
So the complete and total amnesia, where I lost the first 18 years of my life, It's not hard to live day to day with that, unless someone says, what was your favorite candy when you were a kid? Or do you remember the first time you rode a bike?
Uh-huh.
I was with friends yesterday, and the friend said, I remember reading this book as a kid. And I went, really? You remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's amazing to me to be able to remember. I do have three memories that came out, and I do write about this in my book. I did get three memories back. I went to a brain center, and they did a bunch of brain stimulation. So, but that's it, three.
Share with us those three memories, if you could.
I would love to. So two of the memories are about a younger brother. I have no idea how he made it. He bubbled out, but he did. One is an auditory memory, and it's him saying, he's wearing a vest, and he's saying, this is my best vest in the West. I know that may not sound very exciting to anyone else. I called my mom, and my mom said, oh, my gosh, your brother, when he was 4 years old, he had this vest, and he wouldn't take it off, and he called it his best vest in the West. So
how cute.
I can't tell you how exciting that was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then about 2 weeks later, I had another memory of my brother, and he was standing in a little building watching trucks build a road. Now, I had no idea what that meant. So I called my mother. My mother, my memory, and then said, Mom, and she went, oh, you don't know this, but there used to be a little treehouse next to our house, and your brother loved to climb the treehouse, and they built these roads. And I went, the roads weren't always there? I thought the roads were always there. I didn't know. So again, just a little bit more, another little piece fit in. The third memory is my favorite because it's a memory about me. And a lot of people question amnesia. They say things like, can't you just do hypnosis? Only in the movies, I'm afraid. Hypnosis really, it doesn't work in real life. I tried. I did try. It doesn't work. This memory is of me riding my bike. I'm about 8 years old, and I have one hand off the handlebars. And that memory is not only a visual memory, but it's a feeling memory. I have the feeling of freedom, that you know, feeling when you're a kid riding your bike. So those are my memories of my childhood. Well, that's all I have for the first 18 years.
Well, that's wonderful that you have those. And it's so great that you have your mother there to validate them for you. We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with Holly Winter, she's going to share her website information and tell you how you can get her fascinating book. And also we're going to talk about dealing with visual amnesia and dealing with epilepsy and how sleep and eating healthy would help this help you deal with this disease. We'll be right back with Holly Winter.
Nicholas Hazel is a senior member of the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor and author of Laughter, the Drug of Choice. Scientific research is discovering that our bodies only hurt when we don't laugh. For anyone interested in a laugh-out-loud collection of medical terms and poetical music, often at the expense of health professionals' love and life, Laughter, the Drug of Choice, is just what the doctor ordered. Do you want to learn how to live into your dreams? One Door Closes, Overcoming Adversity by Following Your Dreams. The new book by Tom Ingracia and Jared Kredimski captures the thought-provoking stories of 16 people from all walks of life who have triumphed over adversity to achieve their goals. Plus, you'll get 10 self-assessment tools to design your own blueprint for success. Unlock your true potential. Fulfill your dreams. Be inspired. One Door Closes is available from Amazon.com.
Both Nick's book and Tom's book are fantastic books that I highly recommend. They would make great gifts if you're looking for something special to give someone as Valentine's Day approaches. We're back with Holly Winter, and we're talking about her priceless book, Unlikely Memories. Holly, let's talk about how helpful it is with having friends who are there to help you get through and deal with your visual amnesia.
So because I can get lost very easily, I can really lose my way unbelievably. Having people around helps all the time. This past weekend, I went out with friends, and I didn't know where the bathroom was. And a friend could say, you're going to go down this hall, you're going to turn left, you're going to turn left. You know, like, they know how to give me directions. They know how to help. I don't spend time with people who tease me or hide on me. If my friend walked up and I wasn't expecting her, I would not know it was her.
Okay.
So people, you know, might want to be a fly on the wall next to me. I don't spend a lot of time with that kind of person, or I try not to. There are stories in my book of going out with a group of friends, and I went to the restroom, and I came back, and they completely disguised themselves.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so I couldn't find them. And a waiter helped me figure it out. I did not want to be friends with these people anymore.
You know, that would be an awful experience. Holly, could you share with my listeners your website information and tell them how they can get your book?
Absolutely. HollyWinter.com, all you have to know, H-O-L-L-Y. HollyWinter.com, you can buy the book. You can find my Twitter, connect to Twitter there. And the easiest place to buy my book is Amazon. So you go to Amazon, you type in Unlikely Memories and True Amnesias, Holly Winter, and you'll go right to the book. It's also on Kindle and Nook.
Good.
It's on every e-format. I also have a version of the book for teenagers. I find teenagers are incredibly interested in amnesia. So I made two different versions. So if you go to my website, you can see there are two versions.
Oh, that's terrific. That's wonderful. Now, let's talk about you also have to manage your epilepsy. Now, did the epilepsy, was that generated by this car accident also?
It was.
Uh-huh.
So I'm very lucky. I have epilepsy, and I have gone through significant nutritional counseling. I have done everything possible to get my epilepsy as small as it could possibly go.
Mm-hmm.
For the last year and a half, I've been off medicine, which is pretty exciting.
Wow.
And I know every month I could end up back on. But I have found what works for me. I cannot get too tired. I cannot get too hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot get too stressed.
Mm-hmm.
I have to really, if I get seriously tired, I go take a nap. I absolutely take care of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And the number one thing that's helped with my epilepsy, I went in for an epilepsy monitoring where they hook you up to wires
uh-huh.
and they watch your seizures in another room. It's
okay.
a crazy experience.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can imagine.
You want a good time. People watching your brain waves for fun.
Yeah.
And it was a very stressful environment. At the time, the monitoring unit had four beds. So people would come into the beds, they'd have seizures, and it was a difficult situation. To
uh-huh.
relax, I would meditate.
Okay.
I did not know that by meditating, I was cutting down my my seizure levels.
Mm-hmm.
They have it on record, and so they actually gave me a copy. It's one of my most valuable knowledge bases for my medicals, is that they gave me a copy. They showed that when I started meditating on this one day, my brain waves were huge. I was upset. I was
uh-huh.
stressed, and within a minute, they're all evened out and calm just
oh my gosh.
By meditating.
Yeah. Now, who taught you to meditate, or did you teach yourself?
You know, I have been part of a meditation group here in Denver for some years.
Mm-hmm.
Just I knew it was supposed to be good. As you can see, I have several issues with my brain, you know, between the amnesia and the epilepsy. Like, I have brain stuff going on. I just
yeah.
have that. And so I've done a lot of research, and, you know, eating right really does matter. Hydrating really matters. Meditation, every single study shows that it helps your brain. So I decided that was essential learning for me.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. This is something that so many people listening who are dealing with brain issues, they need to listen to this, because there is the remedy that you can actually help yourself. And Holly has proven it medically. Now, how do you stay so positive? Because you are very positive. And what happens when you have those down days? Do you meditate, or how do you pull yourself up?
So I have a number of tools that I use. I journal,
mm-hmm.
just get my feelings out. I get outside into nature. I maybe eat a treat. Because, you know, when you're feeling down, you don't even want your favorite food, right?
No.
I might eat a treat. I might call a friend or my mom. I have all different tools. Meditation is definitely a tool. I might listen to music I like. I have a number of tools, and I've learned more and more that it is important that I'm feeling positive.
Mm-hmm.
I have to remember the things that work in my body.
Okay. Now, 20% of our population is disabled, 10% very, very disabled. What are your thoughts on this group of our population, and what can we do to help them?
That's a really good question. So, believe it or not, our largest minority in our country is
mm-hmm.
people with disabilities.
Really?
And it's the largest growing, it's the fastest growing minority as well. So I was not born disabled. I became disabled as, you know, as a young person.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that we all realize that every day more and more people become disabled. Our American with Disability Act is very strong and very good, but it's constantly up. Many people have the idea that if you're disabled, you don't want to work
mm-hmm.
or you don't care about being careful. People who have disabilities are everywhere, every walk of life, every occupation. I think every one of us knows someone who has some kind of a disability, whatever it is.
It's true. It's very true.
So I really believe that my book helps people. It helps lift them up and make them realize, you know what, it's okay to talk about it or not talk about it. It depends on who you're with.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to ask for help or not ask for help. It depends on who you're with. I think it's really important that we understand that there are many people. So if we're saying 2 out of every 10 people are disabled, and then 1 out of every 10 people is seriously disabled. That's a lot of people.
It sure is, yeah. This is so wonderful that you can bring this to the forefront. You know, I love looking at the content page of your book because you have this very eclectic, very original the book that you've created, and you have the chapters, one chapter on life, one chapter on dating, medicals, amnesia, medicals, visual, songs. You have a chapter on songs. You have a chapter on work, which is your teaching, which I can't wait to read all of that. You have a chapter on work, and work as a flight attendant. Now, I was a flight attendant many, many years ago. Were you a flight attendant? Were you a flight attendant?
I was.
Oh,
yes,
really?
I was a flight attendant for JetBlue Airlines.
Okay.
I loved it. Yes, I have two stories about flight attending in there.
Uh-huh.
Two.
Okay.
One about serving, and you probably remember, I how difficult passengers can be at times.
Sure.
So one is about trying to serve coffee to a passenger who was just being more difficult than you can imagine. And how funny that was. You know, it's the middle of the night. What else am I going to do? But I keep making coffee for this guy.
Yeah.
So,
now, were you a flight attendant before your accident?
No, I wasn't.
Actually,
after? Yes. So before, I taught for 2 years, my first 2 years of teaching. Then I had the car accident. Then I continued teaching. I just decided to take a break for teaching. I loved my job. I loved the community where I was working.
Mm-hmm.
But I could, at the time, I was able to sell my house and live for 2 years without working.
Okay.
Which just seemed like a great idea. I really wanted to write.
Uh-huh.
And a friend suggested I try to become a flight attendant because the schedule's so open. I worked 5 days on, 5 days off.
Right, right.
So I had time to travel. I love to travel. Travel's the one time my visual amnesia doesn't hold me down. I'm not expected to recognize anywhere I go.
It's all new. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from my sponsors and hear about your host. And when we come back with Holly Winter, we're going to have a little more conversation about being a flight attendant. She and I share that experience, and we also share amnesia, mine in a minor way compared to hers. And then when we come back, we're also going to talk about what success means to Holly, if she has any regrets or advice for you. We'll be right back.
Second time around can be better. Second timers try harder. Looking to have a rewarding second marriage, any marriage, read Successful Second Marriages by Patricia Bubash. She interviews a variety of couples that have succeeded in their second attempt. Each story reflects that the second marriages can be tough going, yet be the best of the best. Learn from these couples who share their intimate stories, how they struggled with difficulty and have thrived. Stories such as, our kids drove us apart. We separated 5 times in 4 years. 4 months into our marriage, my 85-year-old father-in-law came to live with us. 1 year into our marriage, I was diagnosed legally blind. Death of my eldest child brought grief, depression into our new marriage. Successful Second Marriages is encouraging, hopeful, inspiring. Available on Amazon.com in book form and ebook. Read Pat's musings at www.successfulsecondmarriages.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems. People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes. People who have priceless personalities. In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Hardly out there now.
Welcome back with a priceless personality that we're interviewing today on the show, Holly Winter. Now, Holly shared with us that she is a writer and she also was a flight attendant. Was it hard for you to get hired as a flight attendant with all of your medicals?
You know, one of the things I like about the ADA is they're not to ask you about the medicals. So I did not disclose any of them. And really, if you look at it, at the time, I was on medicine for my epilepsy. That wasn't a concern. Mm-hmm. My heart problems hadn't bubbled up at that point.
Mm-hmm.
My past, my childhood, certainly wouldn't come into question as a flight attendant.
Right.
And for the visual amnesia, it was a perfect job for me because it was the man in 12B who wanted coffee or the person who sat, you know, in 25A. So I was able to just memorize. So they did not show problems at all.
That's interesting. And how long did you fly for, Holly?
You know, I flew for a year, and then my seizures got such that it was time to stop. And I was really sad to stop. I said, who did you fly for?
Well, I flew Ancient History on the East Coast for for Eastern Airlines, but we're an airline family. My husband's a retired airline captain, and two of my daughters were flight attendants, and another daughter's a pilot. So we are all flying all the time whenever
kidding.
We can. You know, let's talk a little bit about your writing career, because I'm looking at the contents in your book, and each one of these chapters, I could actually have you back for a whole show on each chapter. How long did it take you to write your book?
It took several years. This writing has been, it's shown up in various places. I've sold some online. I've sold some in newspaper and print. And so it was finally time to collect it all together. It's taken a couple of years to get it all pulled together.
Okay.
There were several New York publishers who were interested in publishing it. But it got so difficult writing and rewriting and what they wanted. And then they would change their mind when you were done. And you probably heard that from other people. I just said, you know, I'm going to do it my way.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And, you know, this is a great advice and encouragement for anyone out there listening to us, because there are so many things now available that makes this writing process quite possible. All you need to do is sit down and do it and go on the Internet, and you can get all sorts of help. Don't you agree?
You're right. And I'm very lucky. I had connections, and I talked to people to get the help. And I'm lucky women like my book because they can relate to the stories.
Sure.
Men like my book because I'm so auditory, because I'm not visual. They feel like they can read a woman's mind. And it's ended up being a gift book for so many people with disabilities to kind of lift them up. And I'm glad you mentioned the chapters on my book, because it's really important to me that my life is not only my medicals.
Right, right. And this is what I love about your book. It's so eclectic, and some of these titles on teaching, you have teaching middle school, teaching high school, kindergarten, they don't know about crayons. And what are David days?
So that was about a boy when I taught middle school who was very, very ADHD, and when he didn't take his medicine, we had to walk down a hall and sit in a locked closet with him with a little window and a light until his medicine took effect, because he might hurt himself or hurt somebody else.
Wow.
And I get a lot of feedback on that one. And it's as much a story of how hard it can be when you have so many things to do to sit in a closet, and how could a boy forget his medicine every day?
Yeah.
As much as that, you know, so many people are anti-medicine. Sometimes it's really important to be on medicine. It really matters. I'm all for the natural way, but sometimes you really need it. So that boy was a challenge, and, you know, it's part of what you do every day.
And what are you, just briefly, what is your free solution for raising test scores for any of our parents out there listening?
You know, what I believe is that it's important that they start testing closer to the end of the year. Most people don't realize they test kids for their yearly progress at the 75% mark of the year. So at the third quarter, they test, even for work the kids haven't learned yet.
Uh-huh.
So Special education students are made to take a test even if they can't read. Well, of course they're going to fail. Students who don't speak English have to take that test even if they don't speak English. So people don't realize when they look at a school and look and they evaluate a teacher, well, how many special ed students did they have who we already know can't read on grade level? Or how many students cannot speak English?
Well, this is fantastic advice, common sense solutions from someone who is right out there on the front lines teaching special ed. You know, Holly, before we end the show, could you tell us what success means to you today as we're speaking?
Yes. Thank you for asking. Success means that you're going to wake up every day and do your best. It may not be what someone else thinks is the best, but it's going to be that you learn to feel good for what you can do. You're not going to beat yourself up for what you can't do, but you're going to learn to say, huh, look what I can do. I can do a lot. Success is having the tools to keep yourself on track and acknowledging sometimes you're high, sometimes you're low, sometimes you're feeling good, sometimes not. But success means that you know that you have the tools to keep yourself as good as you can be.
Oh, that's such great advice. Find your strengths and make them stronger. Build on your weaknesses. These are things that everyone out there can do. Holly, before we go, do you have any regrets or things you wish you could do over?
No, I don't have regrets. I really honestly don't live my life that way. I'm sort of lucky. I do something if I want to. Travel is my number one favorite thing, so I always fit as much travel into my life as I can. That would be the closest to a regret, but I do a pretty good job getting a lot of travel.
Oh, good for you. And, you know, as difficult as amnesia is, and you've experienced it in many ways, it does force you to live in the present, doesn't it?
It really does, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you've had medicals, you know you could have more or they could get better. You learn to just seize every day and say, I'm going to enjoy today because I'm pain-free, I'm feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, January, thank you for sharing your amnesia story because that's really big. Big and scary and to be out of control and not know.
I want you to know,
I know one person who had your kind of amnesia.
Oh, really?
And it's the same exact thing, yes. A woman probably in her early 70s.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she woke up and her children said, oh, my gosh, I got her to the hospital. It was a horrific day.
Uh-huh.
She went to sleep, woke up the next morning, and everything was back.
I know. That was what was so amazing. I'm so thankful. However, it really does make me empathetic for people who have to deal with it all the time. I was lucky to recover so quickly. I've never talked about it on the air before, and thank you for prompting me to do that. I want to thank you so much for coming to visit with us, Holly Winter. And I will have you back because I'm just so excited about talking about all the chapters in your book. To my wonderful listeners today, we hope you've enjoyed this show. Hasn't it been interesting? My upcoming guests for the show are all exciting, eclectic like Holly, and energizing. They will amuse, amaze, and astonish you. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful, too. I'd love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. It's our hope we can encourage all of you to emulate our guests today and every day. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest, Holly Winter. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.
Tiger shot a 79 yesterday.
We are going to spend something on such as Sandy, which is, I think, something the country was going to take responsibility in. We think we should pay for it. You know, I offered an amendment on Sandy to take the money from foreign aid and say, look, we don't need it. If we're going to repair bridges in New Jersey, I'm fine with that. And if we're going to repair houses and roads.
Kim Mickelson withdrew on Friday.
Political question for you. Whoever the Republican nominee is a good chance. As we look at it
What is she doing? Zoe, what are you doing?
Well, you know, I mean, the Democrats, one of their big issues is they've concocted and said the Republicans are committing a war on women. One of the workplace laws and rules that I think are good is that bosses shouldn't prey on young interns in their office. And I think really the media seems to be, they've given President Clinton a pass on this. He took advantage of a girl that was 20 years old and an intern in his office.
Nice,
there was no excuse
put out a fire, but at the cost of $20 an hour. I think our fire days are over. I'm going to go sit and put a blanket on me.
Having an affair, I mean, this isn't me saying, oh, he's had an affair, we shouldn't talk to him. Someone takes advantage of a young girl in their office. I mean, really, and then they have the gall to stand up and say Republicans are having a war on women. So, yes, I think it's a factor. It's
not
Hillary's fault. And
well,
I mean,
it should be,
but it is a factor in general.
Who had an affair? How could it be?
No, Clinton.
Be judged on if she were a candidate in 2016?
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that. This is with regard to Clinton, and sometimes it's hard to separate one from the other. But I would say that with regard to his place in history, that it certainly is a discussion. And I think in my state, you know, people tend to sort of frown upon that. We wouldn't be, you know, if there was someone in my community who did that, well, they would be socially we would disassociate from somebody who would take advantage of a young woman in the workplace.
All right, Senator Rand Paul, a lot of ground covered, a lot of ground still to cover, and hope to have you back, Senator. Thank you, as always.
Thank you.
I want to turn now to the Assistant Majority Leader in the Senate, Democrat from Illinois, Dick Durbin. Senator Durbin, welcome back. I certainly want to talk about the State of the Union, but I don't want to let that go. As a Democrat, somebody who was behind President Obama when he ran, if Hillary Clinton is a Democratic nominee, are these issues about the former president relevant to her? Is it an appropriate area of scrutiny, you think, in a 2016 campaign?
Listen, David, Hillary Clinton has established her own reputation, her own name, and her own basis for running for president.
How many does the blue shot this year?
The issues that were raised by Senator Paul have been litigated in the public square for over a decade. For goodness sakes, let's judge Hillary Clinton based on her talents and her vision of America should she choose to run for president.
Hard to separate one from the other, he just said.
Well, I think you've got to be honest about it, though. I mean, there are people who believe that though he may have done the wrong thing, he paid a heavy price for it in terms of the impeachment trial and beyond. And, you know, there was an organization created called MoveOn.org, and the reason was the American people said, we get it, it was wrong, now let's move on. Let's talk about the future. What are we going to do about the future of America? And if the Republicans, like my friend, and he is my friend, Senator Paul, want to dwell on these chapters in the past, I don't think it's going to have much resonance.
I want to ask you about the NSA. What, firstly, should happen to Edward Snowden? What would you call on the Attorney General to do to get Snowden back to the United States and perhaps do a deal with him?
Well, I think Snowden has to answer for
That was good, honey.
Some of the most basic laws in our country and endangering lives and costing this country billions of dollars. Now, that's a fact. Did he also bring out in the public eye a lot of talking about in Congress in the most banal terms? Now we know much more about them. Are we debating them? It's true. But don't overlook the fact that this man was entrusted with an awesome responsibility, entrusted with the most serious information. I don't know why, incidentally, when I look at his background, how he got this information, but he had it. And he took a vow, an oath, and he would not disclose it because he knew it would make America more vulnerable to attack, and he did it anyway. That's a fact that you can't overlook.
Program last week, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee suggested that he is a spy for the Russians. Is there any evidence to corroborate that, to validate making that kind of charge?
I haven't seen it.
Do you think there's an effort on the part of some lawmakers to try to smear him publicly?
Well, I don't think that because this Rogers is the Republican chair of the House Intelligence Committee and yet a person I have great respect for. I think he's a professional, a former FBI agent. I take what he says very seriously. because we have to change that. If we have a suspicion of a person in area code 312 in Chicago connected with terrorism, we don't need to collect all of the phone records of every person living in the 312 area code. That's just unacceptable. The government shouldn't hold it. The president is challenged. Congress and the attorney general come up with an alternative to keep us safe, but to not create an opportunity for the government to overreach. Accountability time for President Obama. Tough year in 2013. At the State of the Union last year, what were the big issues? It was gun control, immigration, raising the minimum wage. Didn't get any of those. What's different this year? Well, I hope that what we saw in the last year, the beginning of this year, is an indication of a new bipartisan spirit. We certainly need it on Capitol Hill. Paul Ryan, Republican from Wisconsin, Patty Murray, our Democratic Senate Budget Committee Chair, sat down and hammered out a budget, and then Barbara Mikulski and Congressman Rogers sat down and put together the spending bill. This was an amazing breakthrough. We haven't done this for years. And at one point, Speaker Boehner had to stand up to his Tea Party Republicans and say, I know it's bipartisan, I know it's a compromise, we're going forward. If he continues in that spirit, maybe we'll get a farm bill after waiting on the House for 2 years.
You get that treatment of debt ceiling without a fight?
Well, I'm not going to say the Republican Party. The president's position is clear.
Huh?
We should cut the budget. We're left with America's economy. We shouldn't jeopardize
the budget
because of another political squabble. We went through a 16-day government shutdown because Senator Cruz and a lot of right-wing Republicans thought that was a good thing to do. It was a disaster. And I hope they don't repeat it again, my fellow suspension.
All right, Senator Durbin will be watching Tuesday night. Thank you so much for your time.
That's it.
Coming up here, we have a notice. There's a lot of talk about Hillary Clinton this morning. Our rep say the weighs in on what the New York Times has called Planet Hillary. The U.S. says it may be willing to make a deal, so is Snowden ready to talk? We go live to Moscow to talk about the legend Billie Jean King as a trailblazer once again as she heads to the Winter Olympics in Sochi. Our Harry Smith with a revealing profile.
The car will be out in person. I was a public addict. I lost all my breath for 24 hours. It's not a good feeling.
to her. She has this sort of dysfunctional, dynastic family. But the question is, to what degree is she really in touch with what's going on in her party now? When you think about where the excitement and energy is for the Democratic base, for those people like Elizabeth Warren and economic populism, and Elizabeth Warren kind of created this prairie fire of excitement. You saw that with De Blasio. And the Clintons have never really stood for economic populism. There are a lot of people out there, Democrats, ordinary Democrats, angry at Wall Street, angry that people were not criminally prosecuted, angry with economic stagnation. And these have not been central to Clinton's issues. So there's a big gulf between where she is and where the party is.
I totally agree. I think she is perceived to be invincible, which is a terrifying place to be in early presidential politics. But she has three great challenges. The first challenge is that she has an impressive story, but it's kind of a backward story. And the best thing in politics is to kind of work with Warren to give her a lot of race in the front. The second problem she has is that story. This is like the third story we've read about potential campaign dysfunction. It's like the court of the Ottoman Turk. Her problem is she's got 1,000 generals and no sergeants, and now we can have 100 pages about it. That's a problem, and that's been a problem for her before. Maybe they can fix it, maybe they can't. Third problem is Bill. I agree that she ought to be judged on her merits, but out in real voter land, it's part of the calculation of people's mind. He brings a lot to the campaign. He also brings a lot of legacy to the campaign. You can't just say, I wish Mitt Romney had tried to say, well, big capital's in the past, so I'm not going to talk about it. It doesn't work in a black Republican library.
There's a larger issue.
Here's the thing. I think that's a larger challenge. Maybe what's going on in the federal party. The larger challenge is, think about 2016. We're now going to have 24 straight years of political polarization. Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, all at some point in their initial presidential campaigns promised that they were the ones that were going to change Washington. They were the ones that were going to get us out of this gridlock mess. We're now a generation. So it's Hillary Clinton. The voters are going to be hungry for this. Are they going to say somebody with the last name of Clinton is the person to break the polarization? I don't know. I mean, look, I've always viewed her candidacy this way. Hillary could be unbeatable. Clinton is a terrible idea for 16, and she has to penalize both. If she's going to be more Hillary, not Clinton. If she's Clinton, she's going to have a harder time winning. If she's Hillary, she must be crazy.
Hillary showed in the Senate that she could work with both sides and she could get things done. Hillary showed in the State Department, having gone there when she was so in a race against Obama to go over there and just really suck it up and to get things done. I mean, there's nothing people have seen that. She is very competent, and she's probably the best thing that we have going with respect to someone who can work across the aisle.
Her competency to me is not a saleable. The issue for me is how effective she'll connect with the modern voter. After 4 years of being in the foreign policy effort, I'm sure that in a way, kind of the defining domestic issues, many of which have leaked tectonically over the last couple of years, non-white influence and political activity, legalization of marijuana, gay marriage. I mean, there are a whole set of emerging issues that I really haven't seen them associated with, and their need to find connections with voters that's about the future, I think it's a real
problem. I can generally sum up, and my guy, what's going on the Republican side of it? We talked about Mike Huckabee and Rand Paul talking about a war on women and trying to bring Bill Clinton into that equation. But how do all of the pieces in the Republican Party start to fit together here that tells you about who has an edge as you think about 2016?
Yeah, I think it's challenging when you listen to some of the crazy stuff you hear coming out of some of these conferences. But I think this is why I find Christie a compelling figure. Because I think, you know, it's interesting in the piece last week on Obama when they did all this constant comparison to Lyndon Johnson and the need to be down, dirty, rough, and incapable, technical expert that has been trusted to make things happen. I think the very things that get Governor Christine in trouble
This program is of legitimate questions have been raised. Now, I don't know what the facts will show, but if you look at his behavior, the fact that he systematically went and collected information about a wide range of programs and techniques that have been used to penetrate for intelligence collection, and then he goes to Russia, of all places, it certainly raises legitimate questions. Who benefited from this? How did he know where to go? How did he know to go to Hawaii to find a place that was vulnerability? How did he know where to look? All of these, I think, are things which, as Chairman Rogers said, we ought to explore.
He's been punished enough, is essentially what his legal advisor is saying. I mean, this is there's a lot of sympathy for Snowden, there's a lot of hatred for Snowden. That'll be viewed different ways.
Well, I think that's preposterous. And he is the one who fled. He left at the point at which he announced what he had done. So he took himself out of the country. He exiled himself. He then went to Russia. He is now regaling the world with interviews and other kinds of public relations things. As far as I can tell, I haven't seen any evidence he's incarcerated. And they keep saying, well, we're going to give him asylum as long as he wants. So this is not a person who's being punished. He has a spotlight and he's using it.
Is there any reason for him to come back to the U.S. and think that, A, he can get a fair trial, or that there is potential for a reduced sentence that makes sense?
Well, I think he can certainly get a fair trial. Now, the question is he going to get a trial in which he gets convicted? And I think there's a high likelihood. If he decides he wants to come back, if he decides he wants to tell the U.S. government everything that he stole, which is important, he might be able to bargain for some kind of a reduced sentence. But again, going back to the Hansen case, I don't think we're talking about amnesty. We'd be talking about maybe life in prison, maybe 30 years, maybe 25 years, but not something that would be a slap on the wrist.
So, Chairman, you know this well. Look, at a time when the Russian leader is seeking to embarrass the United States with Edward Snowden, there's a real question about whether the Russians can secure these gains. If you're head of Homeland Security right now in the United States, what are you worried about? What are you thinking about? What do you want to know?
Well, what I'd like to do is have a level of cooperation with the Russians that allow us to give them the benefit of our intelligence and our capabilities, but also have visibility into what they're doing. That's what we did in 2008 with the Chinese in the run to the Beijing Olympics.
Do we have that here? Do you think we have it?
Well, according to what has been reported, there is some cooperation, but perhaps not quite as much as we would like. I don't know that they fully invited us in or accepted our offer to give them a lot of assistance. Now, we have warships offshore in this in evacuation. I would hope there's a plan in place with the Russians, if God forbid we needed to do it, to be able to take people out.
You talk about counterterrorism, you talk about making targets hard to attack. This is a pretty hard target, is it not?
Well, the core event probably is a pretty hard target. They've got a lot of troops there and they've got a lot of capability. But as we saw today in Maryland, you have soft targets at the periphery, restaurants, hotels, and depending on how far you want to extend the perimeter out, you can even talk about Moscow as being a target.
That home and that mall shooting, did there have to be a national effort to harden these soft targets? Schools, malls, places where these attackers know they can really get a lot of coverage and a lot of acclaim for these kinds of attacks?
I think that's through planning and preparation. Part of what that means is training people about what to do when there is an event. Now, one of the things that happened here, and also happened in other occasions, is it was a swift response, and that mitigates the damage.
That's interesting. This article is all about Mickelson being attached to a great hospital.
You can't make it a fortress.
No, of course.
Can't have things
that
minimize.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that they have him.
Sure, thank you, as always, for your perspective on it.
Because there's no mention of separate hospitals.
Or the
RIM.
Or the RIM. I heard it said that the revealing profile, her triumphs, her tough times, and the statements that she is making, she heads to the Sochi Winter Olympics.
Fuel that gets to
there's a saying around here. You stand behind what you say. Around here, you don't make excuses. You make commitments. And when you can't live up to them, you own up and make it right. Some people think the kind of accountability that thrives on so many streets in this country has gone missing in the places where it's needed most. But I know you'll still find it when you know where to look.
Not my lifetime, but I think there will be.